And now, coming to you from an incredibly privileged position, these two clowns! If you think you can do better, pitch your own shows on forwardradio.org, where you can also find the schedule for a host of shows way better than this one.
Welcome to Critical Thinking for Everyone!
Hello, everybody! Welcome to another show on critical thinking.
Show on critical thinking. And we hope that it's not as boring as that introduction sounds. Because a show on critical thinking does not sound exciting in any way.
But it's a show on critical thinking for everyone.
Well, that is what it's supposed to be. How do we make it for everyone?
Well, we try. We really try. We really try to take this concept of critical thinking and we really try to make it relevant to everyday life.
Everyday life. So if there was somebody just tuning in like, this thing is what? And we wanted to give them a situation or something where this would be relevant. What kind of things do you have in mind?
I got the perfect thing.
All right, what do you got?
Somebody says to themselves out there, self, I feel like going out to a restaurant, but how will I know if it's safe during the COVID time? How do I know?
Oh,
how
yeah.
will I decide if this is an establishment or if it's right for me to go and take this risk to eat at this restaurant?
Well, because eating at the restaurant is supposed to be pretty risky on the scale of behaviors, like eating inside the restaurant.
Yes, exactly. And that is our topic today.
Oh, man.
And we have to figure out which aspect of critical thinking is sponsoring the show today. Because today is all about, let me tell you what today is about.
Yeah.
Today is all about how do we make decisions at this phase of the coronavirus pandemic, which is different from the decisions we were making in March or April.
So I think, if I'm not mistaken, that the sponsor for this show is Questions.
Questions. Yeah.
So I think that would fit in pretty well.
So I thought today we could talk a little bit about this new phase of COVID, and how do we use questions and other aspects of critical thinking to help us make really good decisions? And you shared on social media a chart that had like a display of different activities that were arranged by how risky to not risky.
Yeah, I remember that thing. I mean, I thought that was pretty good
information. Guidance?
Well, because people ought to have at least some sense, you know, kind of what that should be. Like how do I know this activity versus a different activity?
Mm-hmm.
The one that I have here is from the Louisville Metro Department of Public Health and Wellness.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So that's the organization that's put this out. And it is an infographic, and it still does have quite a few activities on it, but certainly, let's see, going to...
Okay, what are some of the ones that are really, like, according to the Louisville Health and Wellness, do you want to start with what's risky or what's less risky according to their chart?
Well, we can start with the riskier stuff,
okay.
I think, because that's probably more interesting to people anyway.
What's the riskiest thing you do at this stage of the reopening, right?
Nightclub.
Darn it!
Yeah, nightclub, because we're out there and we're, you know, rubbing up against strangers and aren't we? Our intention in the nightclub is to meet others. I mean, whether it's a dancing environment or whether it's a more explicitly social environment, I think that what you want to do, the crowd and participating in crowd behavior,
mm-hmm.
even if you're doing it by yourself or with, you know, people you already know, it's that crowd dynamic, I think, that's sort of so important for the nightclub.
Also, you know, the other thing about the nightclub, what's the other thing you're doing? You're drinking.
Well, and you're sweating.
And you're sweating. and the drinking impairs your decision, can impair your decision making.
Oh, absolutely, right? So you're more likely to, you know, maybe be more social than makes sense or whatever that might be in the situation. So they say that's the riskiest. That's the big red dot, the
mm-hmm.
only giant red dot.
The nightclub. Okay, so folks, if you're thinking about your social life, we are letting you know that nightclubs, if you're asking yourself, wow, it's Saturday night, I want to go out, what is safe? Nightclubs, eh. That's right. What we're saying.
Well, and I mean, we should just keep in mind that is there a way to do the nightclub safely? I mean, I bet. You know.
Really?
These are just guidelines.
Sit in your car.
Sit in your car. I mean, maybe you go in the hazmat suit.
Yeah.
There might be something. And no one's saying that it's definitely the case that you're going to come down with some COVID respiratory illness because of the nightclub.
They're just
saying the risk is higher.
What else?
The risk is higher in other big gatherings that are indoors. Right. So indoor at the bar, indoor party. If you're at a concert or a play, you know, you sit there and it's difficult to get away. Like if somebody sneezes, you can't really go away from that.
Okay, so
if you're at the play.
So it's the number of people. That's the the proximity.
The layout. Yeah, I think the proximity. You don't social distance usually, you know, at the play or at the concert, right? Because they're trying to sell as many tickets as possible.
But why is church just because, you know, I guess you're in close proximity, you're singing maybe.
Yeah, they say over here adjacent to church, it says singing is very high risk, increases airborne viral spread. I think that's a big part of it is the singing aspect. I think also people tend to be closer in church. They tend to get a little bit more closeness because they feel more comfortable with these people. Everybody feels kind of like family. You try to welcome one another as if you're kind of related or something. They also say the amusement park, going to the buffet. Is a no-good for these guys.
Also, it says
hugging they don't like.
Stop routinely wearing a face mask. That's
high risk to stop doing that.
Okay.
Yeah, you should keep doing
that. Attend a wedding or funeral. Well.
Yeah, that's their stuff.
Okay, so folks, those are the
these are the high risk activities according to the Louisville Metro Department of Public Health and Wellness.
Now, have you done any of those activities in the last 3 or 4 months? Have you personally?
Have I done any of these? Right. I have hugged.
You've hugged?
I hugged my father.
And
of course, you know, folks in my household.
But you haven't done any.
I hugged my father after I got my diagnosis. That I didn't have the COVID.
Oh, right. You had the test. That's right. You had the test recently. Okay.
So I thought that would be a good opportunity to give him a hug, although we were still wearing masks and all that.
Okay, good.
I haven't done any of these other things.
Okay, you haven't. Now let's move to the next level.
How about you?
Have I done,
indoor party.
Well, wait a minute. When it says indoor party,
I don't know.
The governor said 10 or fewer was okay.
The governor did say.
So I have been doing 10 or fewer. And I have been that. It's been
every day. Wherever the party is.
I'm like, 10 or fewer, bring it on. No, I have been doing some socializing with some family or close friends, and it's always been 10 or fewer.
All right. We hope that all comes out the right
way.
Have
you gone to any parties?
No, I haven't? I've not gone into many parties.
Okay. Okay, so the next level is still risky.
Medium risk.
Can you hold this?
Oh, sorry. The angle. This is radio, in case you're wondering. It's a WFMP LP. This is Louisville, Kentucky, 106.5 FM, Forward Radio. And I am here with Dr. Patty Payette on Critical Thinking for Everyone. My name is Brian Barnes, and we're discussing some of these risky behaviors according to Metro Louisville Public Health.
Yeah, and we're okay. So let me ask you about this next level, which is somewhat risky. Or what's that next level called?
Medium.
Mm-hmm. Exercise at a gym. Have you done that?
Mm-mm.
I have not. I have not gone back to my gym.
No, I mean I've gone to the tennis court. I did some of that.
Yeah, you did some of that. You've been working out in the park. Now, basketball, you haven't, neither casino. I don't think either of us have done that.
Make that happen.
Ride the subway.
You got a shared office here?
Where does it say shared
Work
office?
Work in a shared office?
I have a private office.
Private.
And when...
Excuse us. Jeez.
When I have been gathering with colleagues, we've been wearing masks every time, and we've been staying, we arranged all the chairs at 6-foot distance in the office.
Okay, well, that sounds pretty reasonable.
Casino.
Public pool.
No, that's not public. The pool I go to is not public.
No, I think that means that there's more people than just your family. I think that's still a public pool.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think private pool's not on here.
Well, the pool I've been using does have what's the word? Does have
magic protections, totems, crystals. That's the word you want. They have crystals.
They have a protocol to help keep us safe.
Yeah, well, you know, I did read, albeit early on, so I'm not exactly sure of the provenance of this at some point, but at that point, but I did read that a properly managed swimming pool does sufficiently protect by moving the COVID out and chlorinating and moving it through the filters.
I heard that, and I also heard that the virus is very unstable outdoors.
I heard that it gets a sunburn like that. I mean, like, boom! And it's burned, and it just wants to go inside, right?
Crazy virus. Okay, but you know what else is listed on there is eating inside at a restaurant. And I have to admit, I am not doing it anymore. I'm only eating outdoors at restaurants. But I did a couple times in June. But
well,
I was really careful, but I'm not doing that.
Well, you were probably the only people in June doing that around
here. Have you done that?
I have not.
Have you eaten outdoors at a restaurant?
I've had a drink outdoors at a restaurant.
You had a drink.
Yeah,
okay.
I did have a drink.
But you're doing takeouts.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're getting less. Staying in a hotel apparently is relatively low. Getting a haircut.
Whoops, small dinner.
You've gotten a haircut, yes.
Yes, I have.
Okay.
You have not in probably 4 years.
Under the... I feel very safe under these conditions. I feel like the hairdresser is not any kind of risk for me.
Wait, there was one on there I wanted to ask
you
about. Small dinner party indoor. Okay, so that's the one I'm talking about.
That's
small
you.
Dinner party, yeah.
Oh, I see. So that's not... Hold on. That's not... Party in that's not indoor party, which is red. You got over here. The governor saved you with, or the public health did with small indoor party.
Yeah. Okay. Small backyard barbecue. We did that. Small outdoor picnic. We did that.
Well,
use a public restroom. Yeah. So I'm doing a lot of these. But
all right, well, these low risk ones. All right. Yeah. These are right on the cusp
see,
of
yeah.
low risk. And then the literal low risk.
Yeah.
Vacation home with another family. If both families have been taken care of, there's a lot of caveats here.
Yeah, grocery store, beach,
walk in a busy downtown, but avoid crowds.
The library, museum, I have not.
I have not.
I have not.
No, you can see your doctor. I've done that.
Friend uses your bathroom.
I haven't done that one yet.
I'm allowed to use your bathroom
if I'm walking by.
Yeah,
if you're out there, let the dog.
Golf is okay. Camping's okay.
Somebody lobbied. Over here with tennis.
That sounds probably you, because I know.
There are a lot of people who really want that tennis to be the lowest possible risk.
Oh, so it says risk reduced by wearing a mask, social distancing, and washing hands.
Sure, all of those things.
Doing all those things.
So far, so good is all I can say. I mean, I'm not an epidemiologist. It seems like we still don't know enough to keep, you know, a whole lot of people from becoming ill. I mean, I wonder, is it the case that all of those people who are becoming ill are just intractable jerks and they're just, they don't know what's best for them and they, you know, don't trust the government and they don't trust the authorities and they don't, have any sort of idea about how they're going to take care of themselves when these kinds of situations arise? Is it really that level of kind of willful ignorance?
Or is it something else? Or is it a combination?
Combination of willful ignorance and...
And being really careful and then just having one moment where you...
I don't know. I mean, is that what
hands?
Goes on?
It
seems like you'd have even more people, you know.
All
I
right.
don't know.
Well,
I don't know.
Well, let me
Maybe
try
we
to...
Do. Let's, we need to test more.
Yeah, let me try
Apparently
to...
Apparently we're you, somewhere in the top 30 when it comes to testing, but not beyond...
Well, let me share some insights from this article that I think maybe will help us.
I know you have articles prepared.
You know me.
Yes.
You know me.
Yes, go.
I'm curious to see what you think of the logic here.
I'm curious to see what I think of it, too.
Okay. Here's the title.
All right.
Our minds aren't equipped for this kind of reopening.
Yeah, I've heard some of these arguments.
It's by Tess Wilkinson Ryan. It was published in The Atlantic, which, you know, I have sort of mixed feelings about The Atlantic. But this
more
one...
of a Pacific girl. Truemix feelings would be like a Caribbean kind of attitude. I'm not sure what that'd be. Oh, that's a jerk. That's what that means. Now we know. You're welcome.
I'm
for everyone.
You are for everyone.
There we go.
Questions. But remember, today is sponsored by Questions.
What is a jerk?
Okay, so this is what this article says. It says Americans, basically, they're saying Americans disgust around, like, people who are getting upset around rules and masks. Yeah. And it should be aimed at governments and institutions, not at other people.
What's the name of this periodical?
The Atlantic.
Oh, right. Just checking.
It's been around a long time.
Yes.
Individuals are being asked to decide for themselves what chances they should take. But a century of research on human cognition shows that people are bad at assessing risk in complex situations.
Yeah.
So in other words, you just looked at a diagram,
yep.
but there's a lot
yep.
of grayness there, right? And so yep. people have to go, like, if I said to myself, wow, okay, so playing tennis, Brian, I just heard on the radio, Brian Barish just said playing tennis is low risk. But then I show up at the park and it's crowded with people.
Right.
Right? And I'm not a critical thinker. And I go, well, Brian Barnes said that I can go play. Even though the park is really overcrowded, they said tennis is okay. Like, basically, this article is saying that because there's so much grayness and ambiguity about some of our reopening policies and how they're being followed or not, it's putting us as thinkers in a difficult spot. So during a disease outbreak, vague guidance and ambivalent behavioral norms will lead to thoroughly flawed thinking.
I see.
If a business is open but you would be foolish to visit it, it's a failure of leadership.
A failure of leadership in the business?
Well, meaning it's failure of leadership, meaning they're allowing a business to open when they shouldn't. You see what I'm saying?
They being
the government or the local government or someone who isn't being mindful about public health
yes.
guidelines and letting, like, let's just say certain governors who are saying, hell no, I'm not going to shut down.
I heard that in the U.S. we have hundreds of them.
Hundreds of?
Governors.
Hundreds?
Yeah.
I don't think that's correct.
I found it interesting, too, but considering the source, I had to reconsider.
What was the source that said we had
I don't want to purloin any particular leaders. But
really? You
anyway,
kind of do.
There are a lot of governors.
a lot of governors
out there.
So let me...
At least 50.
This article goes on to say, since March, Americans have lived under a simple instruction, stay home, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we all stayed home. There was no ambiguity. Stay home.
Yeah, there was a lot of ambiguity, though.
There was?
Sure. Certain news outlets did not go along with this message.
Oh, okay.
Certain leaders did not really.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of places shut down.
Yeah.
There weren't a lot of places to go to if you didn't want to stay home.
Right.
It says now, even as case counts spike in states like Arizona, Florida, and Texas, many other states continue to ease restrictions on businesses, and suddenly the burden is on the individual to engage in some of the most frustrating and confounding cost-benefit analyses of their life. Wow. That's of their whole life? Like, think of your dad, Larry, and your mom, Mary.
Well, I mean, the problem is the cost-benefit analyses have really strong, you know, implications if you get the calculation wrong.
Yeah.
So I think that's really the issue, right? I mean, if we're just talking about, oh, this is yet another, you know, sort of inconvenient, you know, sort of episode in modern living where, you know, it's really difficult to figure out what the right thing is to do and a lot of people are, you know, disagreeing and blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's something that, sure, I mean, everybody's experienced before and probably folks will experience again. And, you know, that's really frustrating. But, you know, it's rare that these things end up constituting, you know, sort of life or death stuff, and also life or death stuff for people who aren't necessarily you.
Right.
That's
not just, yes, yeah. Exactly. And she said, pandemic decision making implicates at least two complex cognitive tasks, moral reasoning, which goes to what you just said,
sure.
Right? It's not just about me. It's about other people I might put at risk, and risk evaluation. What's a philosopher to do?
Well, when you talk about risk evaluation, of course, you have to figure out what it is that's at stake, right? What are the values that are, you know, competing such that we have risk? And then you need to figure out what the, I mean, like you can do a SWOT analysis, right? Mm-hmm. And to what extent are any of these values particularly vulnerable in this situation or with this particular type of decision making or, you know, that kind of thing. So, I mean, I'm unfortunately, as a philosopher, it's you have to really decide before you speak whether you're going to come down and say, well, this is a point of view that I advocate as representing what we're talking about versus I just want to tell you how the reasoning generally goes, but not necessarily advocate one of the particular positions that you could reason your way to.
Mm.
And I tend to sort of land in that particular category.
You do?
Yeah,
you
because
do?
I don't want to sway people sort of sophistically and say, well, you know, I know that you asked me that because you want an answer, and all I'm saying is that I could give you an answer, but then you might stop thinking.
Right.
Right. And so if you stop thinking, then I've actually undermined my own job, kind of.
Right. Because you're looking to me for the answers. But as a philosopher, you can help people ask questions, right?
Well, exactly. And that's why questions are sponsoring our show today, because we ought to be asking these questions. And of course, as a philosopher, I don't want to undermine someone's ability to ask those questions when they become, you know, highly relevant.
Okay. All right. So, very interesting. So the cognitive science canon is replete with uncanny predictions relevant to the coronavirus era.
Hmm.
Researchers have studied the human tendency to discount preventable harms that arise from nature and to overreact to harms that arise from human action.
Oh, man, that sounds like some political posturing I see every day.
Yes, exactly.
Right? Right? We don't need to worry about, you know,
climate change,
but these homeless.
Right. Or guns.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, we should build a wall to protect ourselves from people.
Right. But let's not worry about the coronavirus. That's fake news. Right.
No. And we can throw trash in the ocean.
So,
it's a big ocean.
So there's a lots of egocentric bias that goes on in when people are thinking about risks and the nature of those risks and how much should they pay attention to them and is it relevant to them.
Right. And when we talk about egocentric bias, we're specifically referring to a body of thinking that says that often I have a default in my thinking that makes me very comfortable believing things just because I've always believed them or because people I know believe those things or because it's in my best interest to believe them or because I just want to believe them, right? So, I mean, that's a very easy trap to fall into. And as a critical thinking matter, it makes you a worse thinker if you tend to believe things just because it's in your interest to believe that thing. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't try your best and, you know, try to get the best outcomes and try even maybe it's even appropriate sometimes to convince others of how great you are, you know, in a given circumstance or context or whatever. But when we're saying things only because or believing things only because those things would benefit us and not really doing anything to make those things come about or recognizing maybe the negative impacts that come along with us getting the things that we want. It's a hallmark of egocentric bias, and it easily gets in the way of our rational decision making, which is why it's a critical thinking problem.
Okay, so if I'm at home and I'm thinking to myself, I really want to go out and I'm tired of being home and it's a pandemic.
Indoor party in public pool, I think, is what you're, yeah.
Okay. So I want to check my own egocentric bias that goes, oh, of course I can go to the grocery store. Look at, there's hundreds of people going and they're perfectly fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so my question is, what questions would I ask myself to check my own egocentric bias before I make a decision about where I want to go at this time during the COVID reopening?
Well, what questions would I use to check my own egocentric bias?
As I'm leaning toward things I want to do.
Well, the first question I think is, how do I know what I think I know about these activities? right? So I believe that certain things are true, and that leads me to think, well, this would be a safe activity or an unsafe activity. That's a great time to go and check myself.
Okay.
If I can identify those things, if I can, like, you know, you just said, well, you know, hundreds of people are going there and nobody's having any problem. Well, how do I check that?
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, we might say, well, Barnes, that's ridiculous. You can't really check
that. How would I check?
Nobody can check that. If that's what I have to do to check it, then I guess I can't check it, and I guess that means that I can't really go. And maybe that's true. I mean, for me, the whole point is if I can't get the evidence that makes me feel comfortable with the activity, then I should pass on it. That's kind of the whole exercise here, because that would mean that I don't know that it's safe. Like, I can't convince myself that it's safe.
Because I don't have information to check. But
yeah.
But what do I do then if I'm going to the grocery store? Do I just then go, well, I can't check if it's safe, but what I can do is do everything I can to protect myself, right?
Right.
Is that logical?
Yeah, well, of course, if I can't figure out what the answers are to the initial sets of questions that I come up with, then the next thing that I could be doing is asking, are there different questions, right? Are there things that I can know that would also help me know? Because I don't know. I mean, there are lots of things I don't know about this, like how many parts per million of coronavirus does there need to be before I'm more likely to get sick if it's in the grocery store? Like, I don't know these things, and I wouldn't even know how to check if I didn't know, right? But I can, as you point out, maybe go to some experts and find out, well, what sorts of precautions can I take? Is the advice from experts stay home? No. That's not, you know, they're saying that there are situations where it would be fine to go out. Maybe they're saying stay home if you don't need to go out. But they're saying, yes, there are ways to do this. And they give advice. And I would have to figure out who I trusted in this regard, if I trusted anyone. And, of course, that's kind of difficult sometimes, particularly if all of the sources that I might trust are giving mixed messages or maybe even contradictory information. That makes it very tough for me to get the right answers.
That's what I have to
struggle with.
Yeah.
Or I can just go, whatever. Let me just get whatever one is the first one. Let me follow the one that my parents follow. Let me take the newscaster with the flashiest outfit. I can do those things too. I can flip a coin. I could do all those things. It's just that those things aren't rational and they have nothing to do with critical thinking.
Or I could say, I'm just going to go on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, but no other day, right? You could create your own system.
Yep.
But guess what? Research shows people are really good at justifying and coming up with stories that tell them why this is not risky.
Oh,
they're really good.
We're awesome at that.
We're really good at that.
Yeah.
So
we don't want to be inconvenienced, especially by our own thinking. And unfortunately, critical thinking causes me to do precisely that.
Inconvenience by our own thinking. That's right. So we just modify our thinking so that we're not.
Yeah. Oh, if I think about it like this, there's no risk at all.
Right, exactly.
Piece of cake.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here's some research. Let me share some research that helps us think about how we trip ourselves up.
All right.
As states gradually reopen, this is what the article says, seemingly simple judgments are likely to grow more fraught. What does 6 feet between people look like, right? In a movie, I'm in the grocery store. I don't have a tape measure. I'm not, you know, constantly measuring. I have to kind of eyeball that and try to figure that out. The literature suggests that I am more confident I'm 6 feet away from a friend than from a stranger. Isn't that interesting? They cite this research. Now, I didn't go down the rabbit hole of all the research here. But
I think most of the research right now is trash.
Okay.
I think the research that's coming out right now, nobody.
No, this is research from this.
But they're applying it to these situations.
Okay.
I just think we don't. If we're caring about things like research, like hard data science, I think we have nowhere near enough time in these people even caring about doing this research for us to actually get reliable research. I think all of this is totally preliminary.
All right. Well, they're extrapolating from prior research studies. So for another one, for example,
authorities powerful. I understand.
stuff that I overestimate my compliance with public health guidance, but underestimate yours. That sounds like a human being. That sounds like egocentric.
Right? We're using confirmation bias here, but I'm with you.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, sure.
Humans have difficulty calculating exponents, which is particularly crucial to understanding the speed of disease spread. They struggle to estimate the correct understanding, the correct answer to a problem without drifting toward the answer that best serves their own interests. We all do that. Well, of course it's not risky to go to that party because I want to go to that party. So I'm going to come up with three reasons why it's not risky.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? I should probably call you so that you can help me check my egocentric bias, right?
Ask me to ask you a couple of questions. We'll get you out of there really quickly.
And then with more freedom of movement, Americans also have more opportunities to make judgments of others who always seem to be doing it wrong. I have been a little judgy, I admit
Everybody's a little judgy right now, but we definitely shouldn't be. We definitely should be giving people we should be more patient with folks.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult when it seems like, again, we don't really know if people are just kind of ignorant or if they're, you know, being stubborn or even malicious. It's difficult to know.
Right. And what she says is each judgment is a chance not to just get the math wrong, but to let indignation outstrip empathy. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, we need more empathy.
Individual citizens facing a range of permissible options, receiving confusing public health messaging, triaging competing ethical commitments are not the best targets of our practical and moral concern. She's saying in the pandemic that, you know, it is too easy to focus on people making bad choices rather than on people having bad choices. People should practice humility regarding the former and voice outrage at the latter, meaning we're not getting enough guidance from our public officials.
Sure.
So that leaves it up to us to, like, if I'm next to you and you're not wearing a mask and you're a stranger at the store and I'm like, why aren't you wearing a mask?
Right.
So another thing that business owners I've heard say to governors who are not requiring masks, then you have to make me the bad guy. And that creates problems with my customers. If it's just the law in the state, this is the mandate, then I'm not the bad guy. You're making me as a business owner the bad guy.
Right.
So it's, boy, this is a tough situation.
Well, it's tough, but it's also simple. I mean, if we can get, I think, the best leadership that's available to set a tone that says we need to be doing these things, social distancing, masking, hand washing, you know, being thoughtful about our contacts. I mean, if those are the recommendations, then there just ought to be a very integrated, explicit, consistent message. And, you know, then you wouldn't have people able to cite the highest level of authority as counterargument to exactly the recommendations for the highest level of authority.
Right.
It creates too much dissonance and it confuses this whole public health conversation in a huge way.
Exactly. So if you are looking at me as my neighbor and you see me doing something that you think is unsafe, what questions would you ask yourself, or would you ask me to check your own judgment?
So I'm walking down the street and I see you doing something unsafe, and the first question I ask to myself is, what's happening over there? And then my question to you is, hey, what the hell are you doing? That's pretty much order of operation. Well, I hope that solves it. Right?
What the hell are you doing?
Maybe. It depends on how unsafe you're being and you know, if I feel like you need to be startled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you think? Is that not the best approach?
I saw our neighbors that I'm not going to say who it is.
Okay.
They had a large gathering back before restrictions were being
eased. Sure.
And I was like really surprised.
Yeah. What'd you do?
I complained to my spouse.
Oh, okay. So you did a lot.
Well, what were my options?
I climbed the fence and crashed it, masked, and threw poop. And people scattered, and then it was That's what you do.
Well, remember how people were having drive-by parties?
Mm-hmm.
So they drove by, but they stopped and got out and gathered. And I'm like, wait a minute. The point of the drive-by party is you drive by.
I don't even know that that's really the most sensible. I don't know that we have to tolerate that one either. That's like a 311 call. I don't know. Maybe I don't want to get the authorities involved in anything.
Yeah, I just was. I found myself a little bit judgy.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. I remember when... Angie and I were walking the dogs, and we were over on in the park, and it was like the second week or something, and Andy was all the rage, and some kids were out there, like, having a big, you know, running around party with music and lights and all kinds of stuff, and I was just like, what in the world's going on here? And we had to have a conversation about, well, what are we going to do? Are we going to go out there and be, you know, jerks? We ended up, you know, yelling some modest suggestions about, you know, how they should spend their evening, perhaps, and just leaving it at that.
And did they hear you?
Oh, yeah.
And what did they say?
They left.
They left? Oh.
We suggested that they should go home, and they did.
Wow, so you really had the influence there.
It was super random. We had no expectation that anyone would in any way.
Well, I'm proud of you for standing up for thinking critically.
Yeah, maybe it would. Thanks. It's a weird thing because I don't like to be, you know, the authority figure or whatever. But it was so egregious and weird. It was like, do you just walk past and smile at them? Nah, you at least got to walk past and yell something at them about.
I'm curious. What'd you yell?
Oh man, I don't even know now. Something like
go party on your own or
no? It was something like y'all can't be doing that. I'm sure that was part of it and. Something about, you know, don't, you know, shouldn't you, you know, you're after curfew, shouldn't you go home or, you know, something.
Something like
I mean,
that.
It wasn't terribly rude. It was very surprising that, and I think they did not expect that anyone would
call them out
at all, that they would hear anything whatsoever. So,
that's interesting. Yeah. Well, proud of you guys for...
For being narcs. You're welcome.
I know how much you
don't... We've turned the states.
I know you don't like authority figures and you don't like being authority figure.
No.
You don't.
Okay. That's
you don't
okay.
Like
no, I
it.
Don't. I don't. I don't. Well, okay. But, you know, c'est la vie. Maybe some people were saved.
Yes. You could have saved some lives that day.
Probably. We're just another irritating couple of old people.
Okay. So I want to share something with you, what you think about this article. So this is kind of how her conclusion is, and you tell me what you think. For social distancing, shaming to be a valuable public health tool.
Clearly.
Okay.
Clearly I'm into
so,
it.
So what you were doing is you were trying to exercise a valuable public health tool
sure.
when you were yelling
shaming.
At these young people.
Yeah.
Average citizens should reserve it for overt defiance of clear official directives.
Yeah.
Failure to wear a mask when one is required, rather than mere cases of flawed judgment.
Yeah.
In the meantime, money and power are located in public and private institutions that have access to public health experts and the ability to propose specific behavioral norms.
Sure.
Right? Our city, our state level, at the national level, right? They should be saying unequivocally, these are the guidelines for behavior right now. The bad judgments that really deserve shaming include the failure to facilitate testing, failure to protect essential workers, failure to release larger numbers of prisoners from facilities that have become COVID hotspots, and failure to create the material conditions that permit strict isolation.
Yeah.
So this
sounds pretty Marxist.
It says that the half-hearted reopening is a psychological morass, a setup for defeat that will be easy to blame on irresponsible individuals while culpable institutions evade scrutiny.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have a lot of finger pointing when this is over, and I think we're going to have a lot of finger pointing at institutions and leaders who coulda, shoulda, woulda, you know, and didn't.
And left people to their own devices.
Well, and we already have a timeline of that. We already have plenty of those who, you know, arguably could have done things sooner to help folks. And, of course, this all predicates something like fair-mindedness, right? Like you would want to have your thinking include others, no matter what their social or economic or ethnic disposition. And, of course, most folks are not interested in being fair-minded. Yeah, most of us are interested in being selfish explicitly. And so we care about us and our people, you know, ourselves and our people. And we don't really care very much if people who are distant from us or unlike us get harmed. And I think that some of that very easily accounts for our lack of masking and also the the active rage that you see on the parts of some people against people who want to mask.
Or people who say you need to have a mask on. And then
or people who want to be involved with social distancing. It's like, how does it hurt you personally if people want to do that? Maybe in some rare cases it would. Those would be interesting to see. Maybe, you know, in terms of a business's success or some kind of personal networking. I mean, there might be cases where it would be problematic, but man, it just strikes me that it's a very simple, more or less unobtrusive social action that really could make a huge difference, you know, for people's lives.
And if leaders at all levels were really pushing that concept and really emphasizing that, wow, what a difference it would make to if everybody was just like, no, everybody's wearing a mask. Everybody, you're out in public, you're wearing a mask, period.
Well, and I was thinking too, I was talking with some folks about how much this reminds me of back in the day when I was waiting tables and there started to be bans on smoking.
Mm-hmm.
In restaurants, right?
Yeah,
the resistance that people had. And not just, and then it's public institutions everywhere, and then people are like smoking in defiance, you know, kind of thing. I mean, ultimately, it has made a huge difference in smoking numbers. When you and I were young, I mean, I don't know about your social milieu or whatever, but for me, certainly, smoking was very normalized. I mean, it happened everywhere.
Yeah.
It was in and out of businesses. You might walk into a smoking business just as well as a non-smoking one. There were ashtrays everywhere.
Oh, right. Yeah. When I grew up at my grandparents' house and, right.
My first year of college, you could still smoke in the classrooms.
You could?
Yep.
What?
Yep.
Wow.
They didn't make it. They didn't stop that, I think, till maybe my junior year.
Wow. So here's a question for you. Smoking is now, I can't even think of the last time I saw someone smoking, right? I don't really see that much anymore.
Okay.
So, of course, pandemic, right? We're not all out in public anymore
much.
But you go onto an airplane and they haven't allowed smoking on airplane in how long?
Quite some time.
And you look up and you still see that smoking symbol on the plane, on the little like panel above your seat. And I'm thinking, why? This is a new plane. Like, you look around and you're like, this is why? Are they thinking about maybe they'll allow it again? And
well,
they put it on there just in case.
Because that's how old the contract was.
Are you
that
serious?
This plane got made with that. They're not redoing that. That costs hundreds of millions of dollars to redesign.
They couldn't even just make it a smiley face?
Hundreds of millions of dollars. You got to run it through the committee and the whole group, the union. The union. Are you kidding?
Have you not noticed that?
I've gone down this rabbit hole already, and that's what I've decided. It's about the contracts were done in 1978,
and
here we are. And
it's like a 50-year contract, and
somebody said, well, you know, these things are a little outdated, and somebody went, that's fine. We'll be happy to negotiate that at $250 an hour, plus our lawyer's fees.
So they just said, leave it.
Yeah, no, that's just fine. We'll do it. And then they got there, and somebody went, you know what, it'd be nice. If we just maybe got a hold of some local artists and asked them, local artists are like, oh, yeah, well, sure, you know, local doesn't mean cheap, brother. So you're from where again? You know, and they just went, yeah, click. That's fine. You know, somebody tried to do it with an elementary school, but they ruined the seats. And then it was like, we can't, you know.
Well, what if you were a prankster and you were in the flight crew and you said, let's turn on the smoking sign and announce you can now smoke on this plane.
Oh, man, the things
and
that
just,
would be smoked.
And
the things that would emerge from people's shoes and, you know, waistbands and some, you know, everybody's got to stand up suddenly for something.
Everybody will look around and who's got matches and a lighter. I mean.
Yeah, and you'll be stunned. Just stunned at the number of lighters and matches that will emerge. You know, and you're like, didn't everybody go through security? You know.
I just, this has just always puzzled me in my flights. And I'm like, and I don't have no idea how we got here in the conversation, but here we are. I don't even remember how we got here.
That's how we got here.
Okay, well.
We got here because I was talking about how, we went down a little rabbit hole, admittedly,
yeah,
which I hope everyone enjoyed. Critical thinking for everyone on Forward Radio. We went down a little rabbit hole because I was talking about this when smoking bans happened. And the point I was made was people were so intractable. They just, they would not do it. I remember very clearly working in places and people would just come in and light up.
And you were an employee.
Yeah,
there, right?
And they'd come and be like, that's not going to be outside. And it's like, oh well, I'm just going to have one drink. It's like,
how does that influence?
But of course, now today people would go, yeah, you can't smoke a cigarette in here. Like everybody'd be like, what is wrong with you? But then people would be like, all right, just one, you know, kind of thing. I mean, it stinks the whole place up. I was a smoker then, too, so, I mean, I was very sympathetic. But
were a smoker, man.
I was a smoker for over 20 years.
What?
Absolutely.
Wow, that was part of your, back when you were kind of a jerk.
100%.
Those stories. And I don't, folks, listeners who have listened to at least 10 of our shows, know Brian has recalled his jerk years.
Jerkitude.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I actually, the smoking thing's actually an interesting critical thinking thing because I was raised not to smoke.
So it was like a defiance thing?
It was a conscious decision I made. I struggled with it. I thought about it. And, of course, it took me about 3 weeks to actually figure out smoking to the point where it was enjoyable.
Oh, gross.
Yeah. It was a conscious decision that I made for acceptance into a social group, but much more importantly, for a girl.
To impress or to just because she was a smoker?
She was a smoker.
And so you wanted to have like that together?
Everybody was in it together. It was like I was the only non-smoker.
Wow, and so you did that for 20-some years. Wow, your parents are probably appalled.
Yeah. Yeah, they weren't tickled with that at all.
Well, but you know what? You stopped.
Yeah, I mean, but who knows if it's done with me. That's one of the problems with smoking cigarettes, right? I mean, they're insidious. But, I find cigarette smoking to be, it's certainly tolerable these days, and I still have close friends who smoke, so I can't.
Really? You do? You know
folks
who do?
Yeah, I still have
close friends who smoke. I don't know anyone who smokes.
Well, I mean.
Oh, wait, that's not true.
Well, and I mean, I think that people who do it these days, I think they're making a conscious decision. I mean, I think for me, for a long time, it was simply a tool. I mean, I remember I was having because I smoked in graduate school, my first stint through graduate school, I was a solid 2-pack-a-day smoker. It was like a job, right? To get down 20 sticks a day, you really have to work.
Wow.
And so it would be morning to night. And, 40 sticks a day, excuse me.
What?
It's been so long. Well,
are you
two
serious?
Packs, right? 2 packs.
That's like, wow.
Yeah. So, you know, you're right, lighting one off. Anyway, people who smoke a lot, they understand. But when I was doing that, I quit because I was going to go in the Army and I was having a little trouble on the run qualification for the PT test. I just thought, you know, this smoking isn't helping my run.
Right.
So I'm going to.
Yeah. So you stopped?
So I stopped. And in basic training, I knew you couldn't smoke.
Right.
Right. That was a rule at that time. That's been off and on. But anyway, that's how it was when I went in. So I was like, I'm just not going to deal with it because the nicotine is so attractive. Right. And so then after that, I went to language school. And language school was like, it was the Army all the time, but there was this thing you did where you played college for several hours a day, right? And it was just like college.
Oh, boy.
And so you'd get breaks. But if you didn't smoke, no one really took your break seriously. Nearly every instructor that we had smoked. Like almost to a person.
Okay.
They smoked.
So they're giving everyone a smoke break.
So they're taking smoke breaks.
Yeah.
Right? And so you could sit in the room, which you did sometimes, or you could come outside with them. Those are pretty much, if you went and did something else, It's a little sketchy. These weren't formal breaks, but everyone took them for a couple of years. So I just started smoking again so I'd have something to do out there.
Oh, my God.
And I mean,
wow.
Off and on for years like that. Because if I'd be in a culture where
smoking
was
part of it, you were just, you drifted back into it.
It was part of your persona. It was
part of your persona.
Manipulative sort of thing. Like, you know, you ingratiate yourself with the people.
Wow. Wow. I did not know that about you.
Sure.
I'm glad you don't smoke anymore.
Oh, man.
Wow.
It's cheaper.
Really? It is.
It got expensive.
Yes.
I couldn't believe it.
When you stop smoking, you get a raise all of a sudden.
Well, I didn't notice it at the time. I didn't notice it at the time. But these days, it definitely is expensive habit.
So we have.
So if you're not wearing a mask, you're like a smoker.
Really? You think so?
Well, that's the analogy we've been drawing, so I'm sure someone decided to go there. I'm not sure that's what we're saying, but it is. There is a thing, right? A lot of the arguments are the same. Why don't you smoke in public? Secondhand smoke. It's not about you. It's about the others, right? I mean, that's why the smoking bans
exactly.
came about.
So
in that way, at least, the analogy does kind
with
of
the mask.
You know, does kind of work.
So I was in Kroger the other day wearing a mask. Of course, most people are. And I look over and there's a parent and kid with no mask. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, your kid doesn't have a mask on. Like, again, I'm really trying not to be judgmental, but I was feeling judgmental.
I'm thinking to myself when I see that, what is the right thing to say? Because I can't possibly just say nothing.
Really? What should help me? What could I say?
I don't know. I'm struggling with it because everything sounds like a jerk. I mean, I've got tons of jerky things to say, and I'm not going to lay them out there because I don't want to perpetuate sort of bad feelings. But, you know, I think...
You don't want to start a fight in the produce section.
I don't want to start a fight at all. I just want... You know, like maybe, like what? I mean, are you the mask fairy all the time? Like, hey, I got a couple masks here if you'd like them. Like, that'd be great.
You know what?
But who's got masks like that?
I do.
You're going to supply Kroger every time you go?
No, I'm saying my mom has been making all these different.
Like the gambler.
My mom has been experimenting with different types.
Uh-huh.
So I have these extra ones.
Okay.
So I could put them in my bag and I could be like, hey, did you forget your mask? I've got an extra one.
I think that's a nice thing to do. I think that it's obviously passive aggressive as hell.
You do? But what if I'm really sincere? Did you forget your mask? Would you like one?
I think it comes off as being passive aggressive. Like, that's what I think that is.
You think it comes off as being aggressive?
Yeah, I think people hear that and they go,
you're judging me.
Yeah. You have a mask for me. Well, I got something for you. You know, like hippie or whatever. So, I think occasionally someone would be like, wow, that's super sweet. Thanks. I just left it in the car and that saves me, you know, a few steps. That's really great. I think occasionally people will do that. I think more often than not, people will, you know, try to urinate on you.
Or they'll say, if I have a mask on, I can't smoke. So no thanks.
How am I going to smoke this cigarette with this mask on? Yeah, that's right. I can't eat my food with this. Yeah, no, I think that's things. But I mean, that's the thing I've been thinking about. I mean, of course you can just, the problem is there. It's like so many things in society. In society, there are so many of these little fights you can pick, right? So I'm in the grocery store. I'm going to complain about someone with masks. How about somebody who's buying ground beef? Right? How about the you know, the contributions that makes to climate change?
Or the person who's buying the cart full of soda. And I'm like, I'm thinking, wow, that's all sugar and,
Okay, so sure, you could do that. I'm trying to stay away from these examples. I'm trying to stay away from personally attacking that person's habits. If you want to smoke, go smoke in your car. If you want to drink the soda, drink the soda.
Drinking the soda has no effect on me.
I don't think so, unless I want to complain about the plastic waste that they're perpetuating.
Oh.
You know, the meat, you know, has a knock-on carbon thing. A lot of prepackaged foods, be they vegan or otherwise, you know, they have a certain environmental impact. I'm going to go out to the parking lot and I'm going to troll people who have a gas combustion engine. Oh, I see, it's a Jaguar, loser. Thanks for what you're doing for the planet. I mean, the lawyers, if not the cops, are coming, right? So
yeah,
I just think
you can't spend your day doing
are
that.
Are we going to do it with clothes? Like, so fair trade blouse, I see. I mean, would we? It just seems like you could pick fights with everyone all day on these things, right? Is that plastic? If plastic on your shoes, it means that much to you that you would turn the old dinosaurs into your shoes.
Right.
How do you You think that's the right way to think about
it? So that's not really going to help. Those, to go back to questions sponsoring it, those kinds, the show, questions like that will not help people change or shift their thinking.
And what I would like to point out to the listeners right now, because I know my mom's out there going, well, it's the way you said it. Yes. Yes. I grant that. However, it's also the content of those questions. I don't think there are ways to frame those questions to a stranger right now where you don't get a hostile response. Because I think that they think that you're being aggressive. And so that's really the problem, is I'm not sure what the right way is to have those public conversations just on the fly. If I want to put out a table and say, you know, PPE affects climate change, change my mind or whatever, you know, if I want to make a case where I invite everybody, like I do on Facebook, to have the conversations.
Yes, you do.
That's fine. That's a different thing. I'm trying to kind of shape that a little bit so that it's not just a – because I tried initially just – having these exchanges in a very uncoordinated way, even in my own mind, and I found that too many of them went into places where I found myself obligated, if I'm going to be honest, to be sort of aggressively explicit. And I wonder if those are the only options. Of course, some people who don't pull any punches, you know, like Noam Chomsky or Ralph Nader might say, yeah, you have to be, you know, explicitly aggressive. But I wonder if there's a way to do that without people saying, what did you just say? After everything that falls out of my mouth.
I want to invite listeners, if you have some suggestions about questions we could pose to strangers where we think they are not using good public health guidance to inform their decisions around us or other people.
Yeah.
What kinds of questions could we ask that person in Kroger or the person standing too close to us?
Yep.
Do we just say, excuse me, can you step back? If we can't change our distance.
No, that's okay. I think that's different, though.
That's different because you're...
Because I might say that to anybody just because of my... I mean, anybody masked or not.
You would, if they're too close to you,
I don't mind saying... I don't mind asking them to give me a little bit of distance. Although some people, of course, will respond negatively to that. I think that one might be okay. But
that
I mean, something
okay.
about...
Wearing a mask.
Why don't you have a mask on in here? Or, you know, don't you know the rules? Or, you know, do you hate old people? Or are you
immortal?
Or a disease vector? Like, what's wrong with you? Are you mentally ill in addition to potentially being...
Well, don't go there. Don't go there.
Well, I mean, here's the problem is that some of us, that's exactly what we're thinking.
We could be. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Wow, boy, this show is really...
Sophistry's grumpy.
Yeah, it's really taken us into some interesting morass.
We are in the morass. We are in the morass. And we want to thank you for joining us for this morass. I mean, we hope, as always, that it's the best hour of critical thinking that you've had this week.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't mean more opportunities aren't going to pop up. If you want to hear some more of our stuff, you can go out to SoundCloud. You can also look up Forward Radio on iTunes, and you can find our stuff by looking through that material. It is definitely going to be a tough week. It's going to be one where you're going to find yourself very often having to figure out whether or not you're going to say something aggressive to a stranger, right? Whether it's in social media or whether it's in the grocery store or walking down the street. So, you know, give yourself a little time, have a little patience. It's definitely going to be the sort of week where better thinking will prevail after maybe a couple of deep breaths and a return to our sponsor, who we want to thank very much. Questions. Please remember, questions, our sponsor would like you to remember that all of the questions you have today are the results of questions that have been answered or not answered in your past. That questions like critical thinking are for everyone.
Even you.
Friends, you have been listening to Critical Thinking for Everyone on WFMPLP Forward Radio, 106.5 Louisville, Kentucky. This is Social Justice Radio out of the Hayburn Building in downtown Louisville, and we need your support. We need $20 a day to make this thing happen, and you know what else we need? We need a whole bunch of voices to come and do programming of all types. Represent your community. This is local stuff. This is for the people, by the people. And you can go to forwardradio.org and donate!